Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Friday on the Front Porch. Here it is, the fourth day of January 2013. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. A little internet radio stream, an experiment in conversation radio, ongoing for some 8 years now. Available also at a wide variety of streaming platforms for your smartphone or other portable device. Things like TuneIn Radio, TuneInRadio.com, and their TuneIn app, the pro version of which will allow you to record the program for later usage and dissemination, if you should so wish. Stitcher Internet Radio app, as well as Tuner Internet Radio. Dar.fm, Streama.com, and the podcasting is available. The podcast feed address is under the Head On with Bob Kincaid subdomain at WhiteRoseSociety.org. You can also get the podcast over at poor old tired iTunes. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. I might be moving a little bit slowly this evening because, well, it's a toasty 12.1 degrees Celsius in the studio here. Because I'm no good at that conversion thingy. I cheated and used the converter online to find out that, yes, it's every bit of 53.7 degrees here in the Horn studio. Not to fear, the propane, a little portable propane heater is glowing nicely. No, it's not. No, it's not. Well, okay. That'll show me. Let me take care of this real quick, or we'll be listening to me with my teeth chattering in just a little bit. It's not like there's any, the studio here does not have any ductwork in it for either air conditioning or heat. And, frankly, heat is the greater problem. There's a window air conditioner for when that's necessary in the warmer months. But, no, any heat that happens in here has to happen, you know, like this little portable. So it's a little cold. But things will warm up, I'm sure, as we move along, simply by the warmth of camaraderie and good conversation, right? It is, as I said, Friday on the Front Porch here. We fell way short last night of our fundraising goal for any given evening, $150. And so that puts us, well, at something like $250 we're trying to raise this evening. Shucks, that's only 25 people at $10 apiece. And here's hoping we can pull together all or part of that this evening, for there are bills that we're trying to get ahead of, as opposed to constantly playing catch up. Yeah, Benedict, why don't you light a campfire, Bob? Yeah, why don't I just, yeah, I'll just rub a couple of dry cliches together and get it right. What do you think? The studio's a cute little burner downer? Mainly, I won't start a campfire because, well, all this sensitive electronic equipment isn't crazy about smoke. At least not in that copious a quantity. Anyway, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. The snail mail address is there as well. And if you have a hard time reaching the PayPal button, you can always just go to paypal.com. And for the send to address, just use bobkincaid@gmail.com. Choose personal, choose gifts, and you won't have to pay any transaction fees. Because as much as I would love for us to be able to send you some sort of premium, we can't. We can't do anything but give our thanks. And as such, we ain't selling nothing. This merely continues for as long as we can keep the bills paid. Agnes says she'll be here in a moment to change the propane bottle. Bless her heart. Now, like I said, it is Friday on the front porch. And that means, more so even than the other 4 days of the week, everything is open for discussion. Among other things, the lines are open at 304-658-3333. One of these days, maybe we'll get far enough ahead to be able to get the toll-free number out of Hawk. It's being held hostage, not for lack of payment, but for a dispute over an expanded bill monies that the fine folks at CityNet say that we owe that we say we don't. Randy advising, take care that the heater in your studio doesn't use up all of the oxygen in the room. No, I've already done that, Randy. I use up all the oxygen in the room. It's a miracle that thing will burn at all. But to a certain extent, it's better that we use that, I guess, than plug a heater into the grid that connects directly to mountaintop removal operations, right? Yeah. And by the way, just to let you know, the Skype group, or not the Skype group, but the, well, yeah, this is Friday, isn't it? So I guess the Horn Molloy Skype group will be meeting at about 12.05 a.m. Eastern Time. And the Skype channel is open here. The handle, of course, the account is Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. H-O-R-N, if you want to get involved in the program. Thank you, Jack, for a very kind contribution that just rolled in. It is much appreciated. Let's see. Where do we want to start? The silly? The sadistic? I was just, yeah, let's start with this. We kind of ended on a firearms discussion last night. Might as well pick up where that left off. We'll find other things to talk about as well, but this one, well, yes, it's a firearms discussion, but it's also a discussion of how people use language. Which also fits in with those two new teabagging verbs that we learned last night, or phrases perhaps. To shun one's nose at someone, yeah. And then we had the Australian-American wannabe who talks about people who garnish AR-15s. A little lemon wedge. Parsley, perhaps. Maybe a beet, just for color. Well, the way we use language, and the way some people use it very poorly, was put on display by former National Rifle Association President Marion Hammer. really. Where do they get these people? Marion Hammer of the NRA. Hammer time. No, I'm not going to play it. I would like to see your crab dance, though. Marion Hammer is upset that people might want to try to make take a few steps toward keeping things like AR-15s out of schools and keep their muzzles from being pointed in the direction of five-year-olds hoping to be six-year-olds, or get to, at some point, maybe a year later, be six-year-olds, and having somebody pulling the trigger to prevent that from happening. The cavalry have arrived to change the heat bottle. Say hi, Agnes.
Hi, Agnes.
Do you play indoors as well?
Yes, I do, Bob. I do that very well. You should know.
Okay. You almost elbowed me in the head getting the lid off of that thing.
Move your big head and we won't have
it. It is.
Problem.
It's a big old alien head. That's all there is to it. Who knew? But the National Rifle Association has a news show. I may have to tune into that for the comic value alone. The NRA Digital Network. Maybe if you get out a hammer, you can make a little more noise there. She's going to hit me in a minute.
Keep it up, Bob.
I try.
Your second wife will be a lot better than your first.
Because I guess Wayne LaPierre cannot, well, after his stunning performance at the Not a News conference of a couple of weeks back, they've been hauling out different surrogates, and somewhere they found former NRA President Marion Hammer. The folks over at Think Progress writing, the National Rifle Association has repeatedly thumbed its nose at calls for stronger gun safety measures. Blah, 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 blah. No, 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 no. Who are you? Who wrote this? Aviva Shen. No, no, no. The NRA did not thumb its nose at calls for stronger gun safety measures. The NRA shunned its nose. I've got to make that thing stick. Shunning their, as they garnish their AR-15s. But anyway, on this NRA news program, past President Marion Hammer opined that, you know, people like you and I are out there going to take freedom-loving, Second Amendment guarantee-protecting, Constitution-preserving patriots' guns away from them. Of course, that's a lie. Because if you can't defend your home with anything less than an AR-15, the AR-15 is not going to be much help. I mean, really? 100 rounds in a... Wow. Well, anyway, let's check out Marion Hammer of the NRA.
Chris Cox have been telling America that if Barack Obama was reelected in the November elections, they were going to be coming after our guns full tilt. And a lot of people didn't believe them. But the predictions have panned out. It's here now. We're in for a massive fight like we've probably never seen before.
Okay, I just want to make sure everybody is taking note of the regional dialect or regional accent of Marion Hammer. Note, first of all, the course that her logic takes. Chris Cox warned us that if Barack Obama was reelected president, they'd be coming after our guns, and it's panned out. Now, it's true that Barack Obama was reelected before the NRA-sponsored bloodbath at the Sandy Hook Elementary School by NRA sponsored. I mean, the fact that the NRA made sure that the weapons that were used to kill those little children were readily available. Because, you know, not being able to have an AR-15 with a 100-round clip in it somehow puts the Constitution at risk. Even though the people who wrote the Constitution didn't have AR-15s with 100-round magazines. Even though the people who wrote the Constitution had only muskets that had to have a single ball and patch rammed down on top of the charge and a cap put on the on top of the lock and the hammer pulled back and kaboom, and no rifled barrels. Even though all of that, yeah, but who tunes in for the NRA news? I mean, I'm glad the folks at Think Progress caught it. Not exactly comedy gold, because there's not a lot to laugh about here. But she seems to imply, doesn't she? I mean, let's go back if we have to. She seems to imply is she buying into that weird-ass conspiracy theory that says that Sandy Hook Elementary was some sort of a false flag that was driven by the Obama administration in order to take away all guns? Even though nobody said a word about taking away all guns? Listen very carefully and see if that's not what you hear.
Chris Cox have been telling America that if...
Wait, Chris Cox have? Oh, dear. We have real language problems. Anyway.
Chris Cox have been telling America that if Barack Obama was reelected in the November elections, they were going to be coming after our guns full tilt. And a lot of people didn't believe them. But the predictions have panned out. It's here now. We're in for a massive fight like we've probably never seen before. And I hope people understand that they gotta get up on their hind legs and fight, or we're gonna lose it again.
Mm-hmm. What? We've got a massive fight. Now, this is coming from the past president of an organization that wants America armed and dangerous, armed to the teeth. And she says, we're going to have to get up on our hind legs and fight. And I understand that euphemism, by the way. What is she saying? What's she calling for? This is a firearms advocate advocating a fight. What do you reckon she's going to bring to the fight? Right?
And I hope people understand that they gotta get up on their hind legs and fight, or we're going to lose it again.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's so...
Lose it again? Again? What to what does that preposition refer? Again, is she talking about the assault weapons ban? Is that what she's going to encouraging people to get on their hind legs and fight over? Does she want a few people who oppose the slaughter of innocents gunned down in the street? That'll show them. They walk among us, and you never know who they are. You could just be standing there in Wally World, and a law-abiding, some little genetic switch just go from off to on in some law-abiding NRA member's brain, and boom, news trucks. Or should it be bang? News trucks. You never know when one of these law-abiding NRA members are going to go sideways on you. You never know if you're going to have your children, your grandchildren with you. It's a creepy, scary country. Thanks in large part to the NRA.
True. And, you know, you listen to people in England and Australia, and they look right at you and they say, don't do what we did.
Really? With the exception of the gun garnisher from last night, I haven't heard anybody saying that. In fact, I've heard people, we had a note from our buddy Robert in Australia just last night, saying exactly the opposite. What? The Gun Party of Australia got 0.28% of the vote in the last election where it showed up statistically. Idiots. Let's see here. Robert in Australia writing back, writing in this evening. Get up on your hind legs. NRA members walk on all fours. Yeah. Although it's also because Marion Hammer time, is speaking with a Southern or perhaps Texan. I may need some help from the Texas delegation of the Horn family. Is that a Texan accent? Because she says get. Well, never mind. To get up on one's hind legs is a Southernism for fighting hard. I think it refers to bear baiting. Maybe dog fighting. It's something unpleasant. Michael writing in, Second Amendment version 2.0, thinking about tea cracker language. Maybe we could trick the NRA into lobbying for a complete rewrite of the Second Amendment with what we would claim to be much stronger pro-gun language. An unregulated populace being blah blah blah, the right to garnish arms shall not be nose shunned. You know, a little, I don't know, a little piece of radicchio or just right there, hanging under the muzzle, maybe serve as sort of a vegetative muzzle break. Yeah. But apparently Marion Hammer has some co-host friend who's not on the phone like Marion Hammer was. You know, our friends in England and Australia, don't do what we did! Let's go back.
On their hind legs and fight, or we're going to lose it again.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's so true. And, you know, you listen to people in England and Australia, and they look right at you, and they say, don't do what we did. Don't let them take your guns away. And recently, there was a columnist from Russia said the very same thing. Never give up your guns. And he went on to talk about, for those of us fighting for our traditional rights, the U.S. Second Amendment is a rare light in an ever-darkening room. Governments will use the excuse of trying to protect the people from maniacs and crime, but in reality, it is the bureaucrats protecting their power and passion. He goes on to say, in all cases where guns were banned, gun crime continues, and it often increases. And that.
Can we go back for a minute? It's bureaucrats what?
Use the excuse of trying to protect the people from maniacs and crime, but in reality, it is the bureaucrats protecting their power and passion. He goes on to say, in all.
It's the bureaucrats protecting their power and passion? And so, by definition, isn't this an argument in favor of armed people going and blowing away bureaucrats? I know we shouldn't be surprised that it's the NRA saying this, but holy mackerel, the brazenness of it does come across as being just a teensy bit shocking. This woman is citing this note with approval. She's certainly not shunning her nose at him. These dumb bastards want a war. Because they think they've got all the guns. Okay, language commentary coming in from... Okay, I'm not talking about this woman. I'm talking about Marion Hammer. Anyway, I'm sure she'll talk some more in a minute, so wait till you hear Marion Hammer, Betsy, because Betsy says, this is not a Texan unless she is from Central Austin, which speaks East Coastian. No, this woman talking right now, the one who talks about is talking about blowing away bureaucrats, I'm sure she does... No, she speaks fluent Nova, Northern Virginia, because that's where NRA headquarters are. She wants bureaucrats blown away.
Cases where guns were banned, gun crime continues, and it often increases. And that's the bottom line. And that's what Wayne and Chris and you for years have been saying.
Well, we've tried to tell people that in order to control the masses, they have to take your guns. Hey, we saw it in Cuba.
Really? You were there, Marion Hammer? You saw it in Cuba? You rode in with Che and Fidel in the Barbudos? Out of the mountains? Cigar clutched in your teethuses? In your tooth? You, Marion Hammer, NRA past president? Yeah. Hmm. Okie dokie. Wouldn't that make her like 100? That's what I thought.
I mean, we have so many Cuban Americans who understand, but there's just too many people who don't believe it can happen here.
What is it? What is it? At some point, we're going to have to sort out this business of. What can happen here? Cubans are going to come and divest us of all of our shooting guns? Okay, now having heard Marion Hammer, we have to do it that way. Texas Betsy says, yeah, she could be Texan. Or Martian. I'm just saying. We haven't even gotten to the good part yet. The part that's going to make you just sort of go, ha! And shriek a little bit and rend at your garments and run as though you were becoming a wild beast. Probably on your hind legs. No, haven't gotten there yet. It can happen here, though. It. That thing. Yeah, I mean, it already had. I mean, they tried to take our, they took away our assault weapons for a few years, and my goodness gracious, think of the elementary schools that could have been shot up in that period of time by law-abiding gun owners.
They're right, but in order to keep it from happening here, it's going to be a massive, expensive, and long fight.
It sure is. And we'll see what happens as things move along, because Feinstein says she's going to move pretty quickly on this. So, as you said, it's all going to unfold pretty quickly.
Yep, and the bill that she passed in 95 pales by comparison.
Absolutely.
To what she's trying to do now.
Yep.
She is...
But wait, the NRA has already said the 1995 law was no good because it didn't it wasn't effective. It had loopholes in it. I've seen the talking points. I've read them. I've been reading words for a while now. And I still maintain we will not get the law that we need. With a complete ban of semi-automatic long guns and the magazines and a buyback and the outright criminalization of the possession thereof. We're not going to get that. But apparently, that doesn't matter to Marion Hammer, past president of the NRA. No, that would be a very tasteless joke to make, and I won't. Just occurred to me. I'm going to take a pass on it, because I'm better than that. No, it doesn't. But again, like I said, we still haven't gotten to the good part.
She is invigorated by the tragedy. She believes that America will swing with her, and it's going to be a big fight.
She's invigorated and hopes America will swing with her? No, I thought I was better than making a really tawdry joke, but apparently Marion Hammer isn't. You know how it is with those liberals. They're swingers. I guess Marion thinks that Dianne Feinstein, who is not exactly someone I would call a liberal in the first place, wants to have a menage a America.
All right, Jenny.
And they even admit this is about...
Here it comes, by the way. Let's get the complete cachet of it all, okay?
It's going to be a big fight, Jenny.
And they even admit this is about banning the ugliest guns. It's about cosmetics, and it has nothing to do about how a firearm works.
Well,
please. Sit down. Strap in. A little tennis ball, a little duct tape, just to cut down on the screaming if you really feel like you need it. It's about cosmetics. It's about banning the ugliest guns, remember?
This is about banning the ugliest guns. It's about cosmetics, and it has nothing to do about how a firearm works.
Well, you know, banning people and things because of the way they look went out a long time ago. But here they are again.
Yep.
The color of a gun, the way it looks, it's just bad politics.
You got that? Banning people and things because of the way they look went out a long time ago. The color of a gun, the way it looks. It's just bad politics. That woman just said people of color are ugly. She really did. Because she was responding to a question that said they want to ban the ugliest guns, and she responded by saying banning people and things because of the way they look went out a long time ago. The color of a gun, the way it looks. You got that? There was a reason I told you to strap in. See, these little closet bigots and these little closet racists, they try real hard in polite company not to let on that they are. But, well, you know, when you say mattress, they have to put their foot in a bucket and sing. This is just another day in the tone-deaf, culturally bereft National Rifle Association. Not only is she saying that persons of color are ugly, she is also equating persons of color with things. This is a concept that we on our side understand and resist to the extent humanly possible and try to keep a check on ourselves over, called objectification. For instance, when women are reduced to the status of human Barbie dolls because they are considered for nothing more than their appearance, that is objectification. Equating an entire class of people in our society who were for hundreds of years subjected to horrifying brutalities as being the equal of simply getting rid of some extremely dangerous weapons that have a propensity for being put to extremely horrifying uses is a profound insult. Last night, we had that doofus from Australia who immediately, in the midst of his blathering from last summer, bust out that just, broke Godwin's law into a million pieces. Hitler took the guns away. We'll be just like Hitler if we... Right. And here's a woman, a past president of the NRA, who says that persons of color are merely objects, like firearms. And you'll notice there was no... there was none of that. Because she knew she was speaking to an audience that was sitting there nodding its collective little head like a bobblehead bulldog pup in the back of a 57 Chevy. Yeah, they're just like that. They are. They're just like it. But we're past that, and that's bad politics, even if I happen to agree with her. The paranoia, though, is full on. Did you know that when hammers are outlawed, only outlaws will have hammers? Yeah. That worn-out comedian Dennis Miller has a radio show that I think 12 people listen to. He was taking the day off or something and had a guest host named Larry O'Connor behind the mic for him. And Larry O'Connor had as a guest on the phone Texas Representative Louie Gohmert. Well, there's only one way to deal with this. Play it.
I want to ask you a question about one of your colleagues, Representative Peter King in New York. He's a very passionate guy and a great defender of he's a great patriot. But he is on board with this assault weapons ban. And he was actually on MSNBC yesterday openly saying, I don't understand why anybody would need what he's calling an assault weapon. And I personally get nervous whenever a politician is asking me as a citizen to explain why I need my right. But could you answer that question, though, for your colleague? He might need some help here. Why would anyone need an assault weapon as they're defining it?
Well, and I refuse to play the game of assault weapon.
The game of assault weapon. He refuses to play that game. A few days before Christmas, a young man walked into Sandy Hook Elementary insisting The children in that school play the game of assault weapon with him. They had no choice. They were in the, what Louis Gohmert calls, game of assault weapon. But Louis Gohmert, he refuses to play. He's not going to play the game of assault weapon. Oh, hell no. Tell us why, Louis.
Because that's any weapon. It's a hammer. It's, you know, it's the machetes in Rwanda that killed 800,000 people. You know, as an article came out this week, the massive number that are killed with hammers, you know, the homemade bombs, those kind of things. So, that's not the issue. Is why should you have the right to bear arms? Why should you have the right to free speech, even though I don't like what you're saying? I mean, we just keep cutting
Representative Gohmert,
further on our rights. And,
we got a roll, Representative Gohmert. I got a heartbreak. I'm sorry, but good luck with your Texans this weekend.
Because they're in a game, too, right? You're playing the Bungles? Yeah. Now we've got a hard break. Never mind that not a damn word you just said made any sense. In Rwanda that killed 800,000 people, an article that came out this week, the massive number that are killed with hammers and homemade bombs and... where's my oatmeal? Louis Gohmert doesn't give a good goddamn how many 5-year-olds have to play the game of assault weapon. He is not going to play. Because, you know, Mother Lanza's son, he could have killed 26 people with his bare hands. Or with a butter knife. Or a brick. Or a fish hook. As an article came out last week, thousands have been people been killed with fish hooks. Doesn't this rather miss the point? I mean, we have the real statistics for gun violence country by country by country. And of the so-called developed nations, the United States is far and away the world leader in senseless gun-related slaughter. By the way, going back to Marion Hammer and her friend Nancy, or whomever that was, Darlene, subject line, ugh! Oh my God, I don't know which of these bonehead broads is stupider! It was a tight race, wasn't it, Darlene? And then Jan from the UK pointing out, guns are legalized here in the UK, you just have to get a license. See, the NRA has created this impression that America is the only country in the world's got any guns, and that's why everybody else is living under the dark boot of oppressive tyranny. Austria? Germany? The UK? But there is a... France? But I think maybe one of the deeper... truths that arises out of all this is that maybe there's a little more depth to the culture in other countries. Canada. Canada's all gunned up. But you don't see this happening. Maybe. Maybe there's a little more cultural depth. Maybe there's something else to occupy people's time and energies. Or maybe it's wrapped up in our national mythology. You know, the brave individual out there on the frontier all alone against the heathen hordes who were having their land stolen from them and didn't much appreciate it. But we never put that last part in there. I really like this growing idea of firearms insurance. You know, we have to have insurance on our automobiles. Yeah, but that's because that's a privilege, not a right. And that's their argument. That's it, the sum and total. We have the statistical, because we've got people out there who do math much better than I do. We have the statistical ability to come up with an average amount of monetary loss brought on by firearm violence. Just like if you're in a state that requires the purchase of insurance for car ownership, there's a statutory minimum. In West Virginia, the statutory minimum liability insurance protection coverage for your automobile is $20,000 per person, $40,000 per occurrence, and $20,000 in property damage. It's right low because we're a poor state. What's the average hospital bill for a person who receives injuries from a firearm? What are the reducible to present value losses for a person killed in the prime of life as a result of firearm violence? Once you establish what that number is and establish that as the minimum amount of insurance required, well then, you've kind of established a de minimis standard, haven't you? And then there's the question of what insurance company. Because nobody knows statistics quite like insurance companies. What insurance company would ever write such a policy? How much would such a policy cost in terms of premiums? What would an insurance policy cost to, say, have a single 9mm pistol in your home or a single 410 shotgun? What would that policy then cost if you're one of these gun goobers who has dozens of firearms in their homes? You might be able to buy the gun, but you damn sure wouldn't be able to buy the insurance. Michael, writing in. First they took away our ugly slaves, and now they want to take away our ugly guns. That's what I took out of it. Did I miss anything? No, you have the sum and total and the extent of it. Or you could look at it this way, Michael. Guns might be ugly. Some guns might be ugly. But some slaves were ugly, too, and they were useful. Whew. not all guns can be pretty, like an upstairs house slave is not the same as a field slave. Right? Thanks for that little history lesson, National Republican Rifle Association. Meanwhile, Robert in Australia points out, Bob, that commentator is just lying about Australians. No one in Australia ever gave up their guns to the government. The vast majority of Australians never owned, needed, or wanted a gun. And that's kind of my point, I'll add editorially. There's a depth of culture involved there. There's other stuff to be interested in besides sitting around and polishing your blue steel. That's what they're calling it these days, you know. There's usually some sort of oil or liniment involved. Robert says farmers need them, but they don't need military-style weapons. And any farmer will tell you that. One massacre was enough to change the laws that governed access to and ownership of guns in Australia. You can still own a gun if you want, you just have to obey the ownership laws. Certain types of weapons were restricted, and the government bought them back from the owners. But what about that goober from last night, Robert? He said, they wouldn't let me have no BB gun. The company that makes the BB gun in Rogers, Arkansas, they made me one and they completely disabled it so it couldn't even shoot so much as a single BB, and the Australian tyrants wouldn't let me have it. He wrote that, really. I didn't read the whole thing last night, but it was there. Robert continues, as for evil governments coming to take those guns, we don't need guns for protection. If we don't like a government or what it does, we vote it out, and out it goes. The Liberal Party introduced work choices legislation some years back. Think right to work. They were voted out at the next election, and the work choices legislation was repealed. I take it this report is from Fox. We never check the facts news. No, that report is actually from NRA News Now. They've got their own little news program with their own little babbling news lady. Although I'm sure Fox will be picking it up lick-a-tie split. Or not, now that it's, well, yeah. Liberals outraged. Claim NRA says slaves same as guns. Well, you know, only because the NRA said that. Jesus. Marty, by the way, pointing out in regard to Dennis Miller, if Dennis Miller is worth a radio show, Stephen Wright should be on Mount Olympus or Mount Rushmore. Now, let's not shun our noses at Dennis Miller. Or on second thought, let's do. It is Friday on the front porch. Let us start the conversation going. You know the number, 304-658-3333. And you can also reach us via Skype. That is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. Get you right through. We'll take a little break and either start up the conversation or continue the filibobster. That is entirely up to you. It's about 5 minutes before the hour. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
stars. The ladies wouldn't pay his pay. One night, he did wind up playing in Havana town. Nobody knew, at least Billy Voltaire, that these were his final sounds. He met up with Marita, answering from the coast. Half woman, half child, she drove him half wild.
Second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
It is indeed the second hour. I am Bob Kincaid. After Marion Hammer made that comment about it happened in Cuba. Couldn't resist a little Jimmy Buffet and Cuban crime of passion. This is the Horn. It's Friday on the front porch. And unless I miss my guess, y'all just voted for more filibobster. Michael noting DJ Bob may have just outdone himself this time. Cuban crime of passion. Oh, it's fun. It's fun when it all sort of ties in together. Thank you, Michael. Having one's DJ skills, old and rusty though they are, praised is, it's pleasant. And good news on the fundraising front. Extremely good news. We caught up with last night and took care of tonight. So that is wow, that's wonderful news. Thank you very much. Some folks preferring to be anonymous, others not so. So by all means, thanks, Waggy. Thanks, dear friend. Thanks, Jack. Thanks, Beth. And thanks, Ryan. It's how this all continues. A little follow-up from last night, you know, with the mention was made of the fact that Current TV had been sold to Al Jazeera. Glenn Beck tweeted about it. He said, before Al Jazeera bought Current TV, The Blaze looked into buying it, but we were rejected by progressive owners. Really? Flo owns Current TV? Oh, that's Little P Progressive, I'm sorry. Then he followed up by saying, we would have put The Blaze TV in millions of homes across the country, not the existing lineup. Yeah, because we were all confused for a minute there, Glennie. We thought maybe you'd suddenly yeah. Wouldn't you love to see a steel cage death match between Glenn Beck and, say, Cenk Uygur? My money's on Cenk. That'd be fun. Glenn would probably cry. It's fun when Glenn cries. But I did find, I saw something interesting in my email box. I get this, these little updates from a magazine that, called Talkers. And most of the time they seem like they are, there to promote right-wing talk radio, but they talk about the industry too in general. And I'm grateful for having been named a member of their Frontier 50 of the top 50 internet broadcasters in America a couple of years running. But there was one story that grabbed my eye this morning from their little daily digest. A lot of it's industry stuff, you know, who's going to work where with what radio station. There's been a placement of stories about why the sudden shift to sports talk. But then I ran across this little blurb. SNL Kagan reports Current TV Al Jazeera deal a challenge for Middle East operator. The pending $500 million sale, oh my God, $500 million, Jesus. Oh, I'm not going to let this turn into the typical rant about why progressive media keeps falling on its face. Maybe it's because progressive media insists on continuing to walk across a yard full of rakes. The pending $500 million sale of Al Gore-founded cable news talk channel Current TV to Qatar-operated Al Jazeera is a bounty, yar, for Al Gore and Joel Hyatt, but will likely be a big hurdle for Al Jazeera. SNL Kagan states, and I have no idea who or what SNL Kagan is. I'm not much on the business end of broadcasting, I admit. SNL Kagan states, are they a link? No, they're just bold-faced. All right, we got to find this out. How many right-wing shows do they run? SNL Kagan is the leading source for trends in broadcast industry analysis, values, economics, and new technology. Kagan Media Appraisals provides consulting and analysis of media operators, deals, financing, legal and regulatory issues, and corporate strategies. SNL Kagan tracks, my God, apparently they know their job because they, all of the, all of the first page of links are theirs. So they have certainly optimized the interweb tubes to their own benefit. Anyway, SNL Kagan states, "We think Al Jazeera may have to drop the license fee to zero in order to gain widespread support for carrying the channel in the U.S., a move that would certainly imperil its economic model, which relies upon license fees for 80% of the network's revenue. But maybe this is the only way for Al Jazeera America to gain a solid foothold in the U.S. In the U.S., the channel is available only in New York, Washington, Burlington, Vermont, Toledo, Ohio, and Bristol, Rhode Island, versus 250 million households across the world in 120 countries. So the license, so they're going to have to drop their license fee to zero to get on cable cable channels. Meanwhile, I can't buy a package from my cable provider. That doesn't include Fox News. Nor probably can you. That's some market, that free market. How free is it? If you can't get away from it, how free are you inside that market? So Al Jazeera is going to have to essentially bleed itself to get into American markets. But on the other hand, ignorant, semi-literate, entirely barbarian, right-wing gas baggery is free. You ever wonder if something more is at work here? In the chat room, a comment, 500 million is falling on your face? No. No. Trying to, spending vast, copious sums of money to reach people when you're ghettoized up at channel 372 on your cable box is falling on your face. Really? When you think about, well, look, the internet is the future. And as we have proven for in excess of 8 years, it can be done pretty cheap. $500 million. Well, Al, Joel, don't spend it all in one place. But bless their little hearts for trying, right? Yeah. Nice. Marty says, "I just hide and block Radio Rwanda and CNN, HLN, MSNBC, etc. on my cable box." It's not the point. You're still paying for it. You're still paying for Fox News, whether you view it or not. And you are enabling them thereby. Marty also says, points out the fact that, yeah, no sooner was the Al Jazeera deal announced than Time Warner Cable allowed, "Oh, not on our cable system, they ain't."
and dropped current TV like a hot rock. Free market. That's some market, that free market. But speaking of marketing, ran across something yesterday, I think it was. Now, I know we are most of us... I'm not going to say that. Let's put it this way. There is more... There is more to be had in a beer commercial than simply the immediate imagery. And that is complete, advertising is a, what, they're little cultural vignettes. They're little...
This past weekend, Joel Diaz and Ethan White...
Sorry, audio problems. They're little snapshots of the culture. And of late, Miller Lite has been advertising its beer by talking about the fact that you can stick a nail through the can and making it easier to shotgun one's brewski, right? Well... In conjunction with that, they have an ad campaign, Miller Lite, telling people to man up. Man up. Because apparently, one is, what, penilely challenged if one is not drinking Miller beer. First thing I thought of when I saw their man up ad was the ad that went for the AR-15 that was part of the, what do we call, what does Louis Gohmert call the assault weapons game? The one that said, your man card has been re-upped. When you purchase the same kind of weapon that was used at Sandy Hook Elementary. Your man card has been re-upped. And then perhaps with your AR-15 in hand, you can shoot a hole in your can of Miller beer, Miller Lite, and man up. Well, I ran across this the other day, and I thought it brilliant, because I had been sort of feeling iffy about the man up campaign all along anyway. But there's always somebody who can do it a little bit better. This fella is named Guante. He's a hip-hop artist. And he's a two-time National Poetry Slam champion. And apparently he was none too impressed by the Man Up campaign either. Check it out.
Going to the second round. found wanting. Ten responses to the phrase, man up. One, fuck you. Two, if you want to question my masculinity, like a schoolyard circle of curses, like a sword fight with lightsaber erections, save your breath. Because contrary to what you may believe, not every problem can be solved by growing a pair. You can't arm wrestle your way out of chemical depression. The CEO of the company that just laid you off does not care how much you bench. And I promise, there is no light beer in the universe full body enough to make you love yourself. Three. Man up. Oh, that's that new superhero, right? Mild-mannered supplement salesman Mark Manstrong says the magic words, man up, and then transforms into the 5 o'clock shadow. The massive muscle, deep voice, black leather, duster wearing superhero who defends the world from, I don't know, feelings. See, I don't drink a lot of beer. Because I'm not a real man, but I'm pretty sure that of all the beers in the world, Miller Lite is not the most flavorful brew. It kind of tastes like whatever insecure jackass wrote these man-up commercials got rejected by a beautiful no-nonsense bartender drank a six-pack of real beer alone in his apartment, and then Miller bottled his tears. You might have noticed how nobody ever says woman up. They just implied it, because women and the women's movement figured out a long time ago that being directly ordered around by commercials, magazines, and news is dehumanizing. When will men figure that out? Six, man up. Assaults our self-esteem by suggesting that competence and perseverance are uniquely masculine traits that women, not to mention any man who doesn't eat steak, drive a pickup truck, have lots of sex with women, and otherwise conform to gender norms absolutely are nothing more than background characters and props in a movie where the strong, stoic, real man is the hero. More than anything, though, it suggests that to be yourself, whether you wear skinny jeans, listen to Lady Gaga, rock a little eyeliner, drink some other brand of light beer, or write poetry will cost you. Seven, how many boys have to kill themselves before this country acknowledges the problem?
Yeah.
How many women have to be abused? How many trans people have to get assaulted? We teach boys how to wear the skin of a man, but we also teach them how to raise that skin like a flag and draw blood for it. Eight, boy babies get blue socks. Girl babies get pink socks. What about purple? What about orange, yellow, chartreuse, cerulean, black, tie-dye, buffalo plaid, rainbow? There are so many beautiful colors and combinations of colors, yet boy babies get blue socks and girl babies get pink socks. Nine, I want to be free to express myself. Man up. I want to have meaningful, emotional relationships with other men. Man up. I want to be weak sometimes. Man up. I want to be strong in a way that isn't about physical dominance or power. Man up. I want to cry if I feel like crying. Man up. I want to ask for help. Man up. I want to be who I am. Man up. Ten. No.
No. Guanta. Ten responses to the phrase, man up. Let's see. Okay, first email coming in for link, please. All right, stand by. In the chat room. And in the email. Yeah, it is. It is brilliant, Michael. It is absolutely brilliant.
It's also absolutely true. And it is another way of perhaps pushing back against this constant assault of phony poser machismo that is poured like poison into the ears of our young male progeny almost every day. By the way, there is an answer to why blue for boys and pink for girls. I'll bet Jim knows this. Prior to the rise of, and this is not a Godwin's Law thing, this is just history. It's my understanding that prior to the rise of the Third Reich, pink was actually quite in vogue for little boy babies. And blue was used for little girls. But because the Third Reich used the pink triangle, just as they did the yellow Star of David, to denote certain undesirables in the culture, make them easier to round up, the pink triangle was used for homosexuals. Pink became associated with weakness and effeminacy. And from that day to this, blue socks for little boys, pink socks for little girls. I went to that piece for a particular reason. And we will get to it, I think, in time. The lines are open, however, 304-658-3333, and on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. And let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
This is Edward.
Hey, Edward, how are you?
I just wanted to wish you all a very happy 12th night. It's not till Sunday, but I'll have to do it now. And tell everybody to be very careful, because somebody once said years ago in a play, things are not the way they seem on 12th night.
That is indeed true. Thank you very kindly, Ed.
Oh, and by the way, the pink thing, I wish it had not been in vogue when I was graduating from high school. I got so many pink ties, I couldn't stand it. You know, the gray suits and the pink ties?
Oh, yes.
Oh, Lord. I'm glad that fashion went out of fashion.
Well, you know, I'm one of those guys, largely because of my complexion, I actually look to the extent I ever look good. I have image issues. But I look good in pink. And so I've never been afraid to wear a pink Oxford button-down or a pink polo shirt or pink anything. I think it's pretty.
Well, I look better in blue. And I'm a blonde, too. But I always thought I looked better in blue.
Well, blues work well for me, too, because of my eyes. It makes them pop.
Oh, well, I've got brown eyes. I was one of those weird people. I was blonde with brown eyes. We were sort of weird.
But I don't think that's defined by eye color.
No, really, it isn't. But anyway, I want you all to have a very happy 12th night. And speaking of mysterious and wonderful things, in Eastern North Carolina, we didn't call it 12th night. We called it Old Christmas.
Really?
And they celebrated Old Christmas. And this is, I think, not about 1932. And my parents had come home for the holidays. My dad was a career man in the U.S. Coast Guard. And my brother was, I think, 5 years old. Anyway, they had done a real bang-up supper. Grandmother and Aunt Olive Ann and my mother, and supper was ready, and they had called Harry, and he didn't show up. So they went up to the front of the house, looked around. looked upstairs in the bedrooms, under the beds, in the closets, everywhere. Went out on the back porch. They lighted their kerosene lanterns. They went out to the barn and searched it. And the stables and the wash house. And on the way back, Aunt Olive Ann passed the chicken coop. And she thought, well, he won't be in here. But she opened the door and looked in, and there was my brother sitting up on the roost with a chicken. And the chickens were not amused. And she says, why are you in here? What are you doing? And he says, I'm waiting to hear the chickens talk. Because we were told that dumb animals would gain the power of speech on Twelfth Night. Watch out what you tell children, because they may believe you.
Indeed. That's
That's a true story.
And that's one of those things that can happen on Twelfth Night?
Oh, yeah. Dumb animals gain the power of speech, and the animals in the stables get on their knees. Oh, there are all sorts of miraculous things happen. But be careful, and I have an old Scottish charm to protect all of you from. It goes this way. From ghosties and ghoulies and long-legged beasties and things that go bump in the night, dear Lord, protect us. Amen. So you all have a happy 12th night.
Gonna sure try. Thank you kindly, Edward. You have a wonderful weekend, and a happy 12th night to you. Bye now. I think it'd be more fun if all 12 days of Christmas were celebrated, wouldn't it? We wouldn't be worrying about actually having to get anything done till like Monday. Email coming in regarding BB guns from Robert in Australia. Regarding poor old Nick Adams. Yeah, that was his name. How can I forget? That's a Hemingway character. Sounds like he tried to buy a BB gun through the mail. Importing weapons into Australia from overseas is illegal without a permit. Most states will not allow guns of any type to be imported. Customs will also stop knives, swords, or any other type of weapon, even if only for display, from being imported. BB guns or air guns are illegal to own or possess without an appropriate license or permit in most states in Australia, as they are classified as firearms. They are completely banned in New South Wales, Victoria, and Western Australia. In other states, military-style-looking air guns are banned, and the remaining all fall under various firearm categories and restrictions. You cannot obtain a license if you're under 18 years of age. I wonder how and when Nick Adams tried to obtain his. Well, he makes clear in his article, Robert, that it was while he was touring America. And he went to the factory in, I believe he cites, Rogers, Arkansas. Arkanstan. And I guess fulminated over how he had led some sort of deprived life because he'd never had his Red Ryder BB gun with the compass in the stock. And nobody said, you'll shoot your eye out, kid. It is the, well, it's recently that time of year. But that's precisely what it was, because it was, they wouldn't allow it into the country because it was, you know, shipped in. And somehow or another, he feels less free out of that. And ultimately, I think that's the question we come around to. How do we define freedom? Now, we are beset on all sides by various and sundry grade of gun goobs who cannot define freedom in any other means save that by that which flows from proceeds from the muzzle of a gun. Wouldn't that sort of make them Maoists? Because that was Chairman Mao who said that politics or power, was it, proceeds from the muzzle of a gun? Yeah. Who knew? The Second Amendment gun goobs are a bunch of damn Maoists. You'd knock me over with a feather for all of their talk about freedom, Wolverines!
But there are real questions of freedom and masculinity that beg for some sort of answer by our culture. Because we have real problems. Like I said, from a moment children become aware, they are bombarded with advertising messages. If it's nothing more than to make mommy and daddy take them to McDonald's to play in that wonderful McDonald's land play yard while feeding them factory farmed, ugh, and beginning the assault on their tiny little pancreas, with high fructose corn syrup. The pedophile in the audience will say, yeah, and all those poor pitiful animals slaughtered on those CAFOs. Absolutely. And the marketing geniuses immediately cull the herd, as it were, separating the males from the females. That charming and inspiring story that transpired in the last month or so of the little girl who wanted a gender-neutral easy-bake oven so her baby brother could help her make little cakes. And lo and behold, the company acceded. And the first one will roll off the assembly line somewhere in China and be available for Christmas season next year. Because suddenly somebody in the marketing department said, wait a minute, look at all these celebrity chefs on television. They're all guys. There might be a market for that. That's a good dollar. Easy Bake Oven was always marketed to little girls because, you know, little girls are the ones who are supposed to grow up and learn how to cook. I mean, it's embedded deeply inside our culture. Boys in former eras took shop. Girls took home economics, home ec. Boys learned to make lamps that looked like elephants so that when you pulled the trunk, the light would come on. Girls learned to cook and to clean and to sew. For eons, typing class was gender biased. It's all over the culture if you bother to take even a tiny little glance. If you don't shun your nose at that kind of thinking, you can find it all over. The Appeals Court of California even got involved in it recently. This is a shocking story. Disgusting story. An appeals court in California, a criminal court of appeals, has reversed the conviction of a rapist. Because the woman he raped wasn't married. Really? They relied on an 1872 law that said having sex with a woman by pretending to be her husband
was rape. But that, well, by definition, if she's not married, well, you can't be. Can't be raped. Here's the fact pattern that gave rise to the case. Now, use your common sense and decide for yourself whether or not this sounds like rape. The style of the court is, in the Court of Appeal, this is the caption, in the Court of Appeal of the State of California, 2nd Appellate District, Division 4, The People versus Julio Morales. Appeal from a judgment of the Superior Court for Los Angeles County, Robert J. Higa, Judge, reversed and remanded. These are the actual words from the appellate court's decision. A man enters the dark bedroom of an unmarried woman after seeing her boyfriend leave late at night and has sexual intercourse with the woman while pretending to be the boyfriend. Has the man committed rape? Because of historical anomalies in the law and the statutory definition of rape, the answer is no. Even though, if the woman had been married and the man had impersonated her husband, the answer would be yes. And here's how the case arose. In the present case, defendant Julio Morales entered the dark bedroom of victim Jane Doe after her boyfriend departed and, without disclosing his identity, had sexual intercourse with her. He was charged with rape of an unconscious person under Penal Code Section 261, Subdivision A4. The jury was instructed with California Criminal Instruction Number 1003, which, as given, stated in part that, quote, a woman is unconscious of the nature of the act if she is unconscious or asleep or not aware that the act is occurring or not aware of the essential characteristics of the act because the perpetrator tricked, lied to, or concealed information from her. The prosecutor argued both correct and incorrect theories under which Jane was unconscious, that she was asleep, correct, that she was not aware of the essential characteristics of the act because defendant deceived her into believing he was her boyfriend, as we explained below, incorrect. Huh? The defendant was convicted. The trial court sentenced him to the low term of 3 years in state prison. You know, for rape. And that is what the appeal centers on. On February the 20th, 2009, 18-year-old Jane Doe went to a party with her boyfriend, Victor, and another friend. Jane's brother, Filiberto, and several of his friends, including defendant, also attended the party. Jane drank 3 to 5 beers at the party. Why is this part of the fact pattern? This can only be part of the fact pattern if somehow or another the rape victim's conduct is subject to criticism. Jane drank 3 to 5 beers at the party. Jane, Victor, and her friend left the party at 1 or 2 a.m. and stopped to pick up some fast food before going to Jane's house to eat. Jane lived with her mother, her brother Filiberto, and a younger sister. Jane changed into her pajamas before sitting down at the dining room table to eat. Filiberto and his friends arrived at Jane's house while Jane and Victor were eating and sat in the living room. Jane and Victor went into her bedroom after they finished eating, turned off the light, and lay down on her bed. Jane asked Victor to spend the night, but he declined because he had something to do the next morning. They talked about having sex, but Victor did not have a condom, and they never engaged in unprotected sex. Yay! So they decided not to. Eventually, Jane fell asleep while Victor was still there. Victor left sometime later. You know, my God, it's like 4 o'clock in the morning, right?
In the meantime, Filiberto had left his friends in the living room while he went outside to talk on the phone. About 5 or 10 minutes after Victor left, two of the friends went outside to get Filiberto, leaving defendant and two others, Robert, who was asleep on the couch, and Tony in the living room. According to Jane, she woke up to the sensation of having sex. She was in a different position on the bed, perpendicular to the position she had been in when she fell asleep. She was confused because she and Victor had agreed not to have sex that night. When light coming through a crack in the bedroom door illuminated the face of the person having sex with her, i.e. defendant, she realized it was not Victor and tried to push him away. Defendant grabbed her thighs and pushed his penis back into her vagina. She pushed him away again and began to cry and yell. Defendant left her room. Jane locked her door and called Victor, asking him to come back to her house. When Victor got to the house and learned what had happened, he called the police. Deputy Sheriff Peralta and other deputies responded and searched the area, eventually finding defendant crouched down behind some bushes. While being detained in Deputy Peralta's patrol car, defendant spoke to another deputy, Deputy Lane. He admitted that he had gone into Jane's room while she was asleep. He said that he had kissed her and that she had kissed him back, but he thought she might still be asleep. He pulled down her pajama bottoms, got on top of her, and started to have sex. He said she probably thought he was her boyfriend, and when she realized he was not, she started screaming. During a second interview with Deputy Lane, defendant once again described what happened, including that Jane was asleep when he put his penis into her vagina and wrote out a statement admitting that he kissed Jane and touched her vagina while she was still asleep. Then there's the defendant's story. He says that sometime after Victor left, Tony and he went into Jane's room at Tony's suggestion. They nudged Jane to try to awaken her so she could come out and drink with them. Defendant then realized that Tony was no longer in the room and the door was closed. He tried to leave, but the door would not open. Open Saskatchewan? Open Sarsaparilla? Right? The door would not open. He tried to wake Jane up by nudging her again, but she did not move. He thought she was attractive, so he kissed her on the cheek. Because, you know, that's just normal. You're in a sleeping woman's room, and you look, and you sure do got a pretty face. And you just got to kiss it. It's the pretty, right? He thought she was not asleep because she responded to his kisses, but he also thought she believed he was her boyfriend. They kissed for several minutes, and he became aroused. Well, you know, once he becomes aroused, it's her problem, right? He began to take her pajamas and underwear off, and she lifted her hips to help him. He unbuckled his belt, pulled down his pants, and began to have sex. He stopped because he felt he was betraying his girlfriend. Really? The conscience kicked in. You know, at the same time, right. Dear God. So you've got the same facts at this point in time. You've got the same facts that the court had. And the court, the trial court, one presumes, including a jury tried and true, heard those very same facts and did the obvious thing and convicted the guy. Because really, when it turns out in either set of facts that a man begins having sex with a person who doesn't know, that's rape. There's no consent. Now, I'm sure there are some Republicans out there who would say, but wait, it doesn't sound too forcible to me. I mean, he quit when she screamed. Is that the new standard in America? It's not rape if the guy quits raping when the victim screams?
Well, the court hearing all of the appeals court hearing all of this said reversal is required because the prosecutor argued an incorrect theory of guilt. The instruction permitted the jury to convict on that theory, and the record does not permit us to find that the jury relied on only the prosecutor's correct theory. The contention by the defendant being that the trial court's instruction of rape of an unconscious person was flawed because it allowed the jury to convict on an improper legal theory that defendant fraudulently concealed that he was not Jane's boyfriend when he had sexual intercourse with her. So the appellate court of California has now said that in order for that to happen, as long as you don't wake her up and say, "Hi, I'm your boyfriend," even if you're not, and then you proceed to rape her, well, that's rape, sort of. Except for the fact that it applies to husbands and not boyfriends. Because the ancient statute in question says rape is an act of sexual intercourse accomplished with a person not the spouse of the perpetrator under any of the following circumstances, section 4, where a person is at the time unconscious of the nature of the act, and this is known to the accused. Unconscious of the nature of the act means incapable of resisting because the victim meets one of the following conditions: was unconscious or asleep, was not aware, knowing, perceiving, or cognizant, was not aware, knowing, perceiving, or cognizant of the essential characteristics of the act, was not aware, knowing, perceiving, or cognizant of the essential characteristics of the act due to the perpetrator's fraudulent representation, that the sexual penetration served a professional purpose when it served no professional purpose. Oh, my God. The defense objected to the instruction because they said that Morales had not tricked, lied, or concealed information from Jane. You know, he just jumped on. Well, no, he didn't just jump on. He turned her perpendicular on the bed from how she had been, removed her pajama bottoms, and then jumped on and began a raping. But that, according to the California Appeals Court, is okay. God Almighty. So now the guy has to be sent back to the trial court and retried. I'm inclined to ask a question here. How was this not pled out? How is this not part of a plea agreement? Is anybody working in the DA's office? Is anybody competent? And the rapist gets 3 years? For rape. That's just mind-boggling. But then again, it would seem that ever so much to me is. Quick trip to the email box. Tamara writes in from San Diego. May I remind you, the case in California is not all that dissimilar to the Julian Assange case, having sex with an unconscious person, I mean. I'm glad you're talking about this. Couldn't very well leave it go. Because, well,
the law is such that it often takes an awfully long damn time to getting around to getting some of the nastier things out of. Take, for instance, the fact that some several new laws are taking effect in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. HB 85, House Bill 85 in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, finally, 150 years later, or maybe 140 years later, we'll split the difference at 145. HB 85 finally, in the year 2013, removes from the law books of the Commonwealth of Kentucky language regarding pensions for Confederate soldiers. The secretly raped by somebody pretending to be your husband law in California is of roughly the same vintage. We have misogyny, racism, gender biases, all manner of antiquated, semi-barbaric attitudes deeply buried within our statute books to this day in any given state you care to look. I think it is still legal, although I would not hope to live to see the next morning if I tried it. I think it is still legal for me on Saturdays to take Agnes to the courthouse steps in my county and beat her with a rod no thicker than my thumb. I would not see the sunrise, mind you. But I think it's still legal for me to do that, you know, because women are to be, oh, what does the Christian holy book say? Submissive, subservient, obedient to a man. Yeah. I wonder if maybe the California legislature might get around to fixing this mess. I wonder how long it will take to change the attitudes, and I think this is the more important inquiry, to change the attitudes of young drunk men who think that a sleeping girl is laying there asleep waiting for someone to have sex with them. Right? Is this the part where we stand up and sing them? If tomorrow all my freedoms were gone except my women and my truck. What is Lee Green? I don't know. No, we will take a little break, though. The lines are open. 304-658-3333. Jump in at your pleasure and at your leisure. Skype is open at Bob Kincaid Horn. This is Conversation Radio, listener-supported. We'll be right back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sure. vacation and buy me a star to live out in Californication. Space may be the final frontier, but it's made in a Hollywood basement. And so bang, can you hear the spheres singing songs off station to station? And now they're all
about 55 minutes worth of conversation left in this evening's program. Do not try to accomplish it in the last 3 minutes of the program. If you want to jump in, jump in line, 304-658-3333, or on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Either way gets you into the same queue. So, no, it's all up to you. We will go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Jim.
I guess I'm going to try to stampede cattle through the Vatican now.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, it makes about as much sense as... I'm sorry, maybe it's my computer, maybe it's me, but going back to this... Well, first thing I want to say is to your previous caller about 12th night. 12th night's a wonderful thing. And, you know, that's when you basically undecorate for Christmas and stuff like that. You can actually stretch it out to February 2nd for Candlemas, but nonetheless, not to get into the liturgical calendar, but going back to your story about this rape, Now, let me understand something.
I know. Your eyes felt like they were crossing, didn't they, Jim?
Well, I mean, the key phrase was removing her from one position to the perpendicular.
Yeah, she was laying the right way in the bed, and he moved her to where she was laying widthway on the bed.
Well, to be perpendicular, I mean, she has to be standing up.
Well, I realize that, but geometry is not the long suit of most lawyers.
Yeah, but it is for 10th grade high school students. I mean, everybody.
Jim, there's an old gag that goes around. You know what you call a lawyer with an IQ of 30? Your Honor.
Yeah, I've heard that too. But anyway, I just don't understand this at all. Number one, was the victim so out of it that she couldn't tell her boyfriend from somebody else?
Well, no, she was just asleep.
Oh, Bob, how? Okay, I'm not trying to be contentious or whatever, but the question arises in my mind: how can you be? Well, okay, I guess, but how can you be asleep when you're having sex?
Well, she wasn't. He was. Having sex, that is. She was minding her own business, being asleep. And, yeah, she'd had two or three beers. And, you know, for somebody of, say, my size, two or three beers is, you know, cocktail hour.
Mm-hmm.
But for, you know, say a young woman of 18 years of age, that was brought out, so A, she shouldn't have been drinking in the first place, but that's immaterial. But for two or three beers of an 18-year-old young woman who weighs maybe 110 pounds, you know, that's lampshade time. So she could have been quite thoroughly asleep. But she was obviously, and it was uncontroverted, she was obviously enough in her right mind for she and her boyfriend to make the decision that they were not going to have unprotected sex, which I thought was pretty laudable. And he, being a decent human being, says, well, okay, I got stuff to do tomorrow. Good night, baby. And, you know, kisses her and leaves.
Well, after going through that decision-making process, then it would appear to me as though she would be even more basically aware that something was happening to her that she did not.
Well, there's a passage of time here. It's between 1 and 2 when they get back to the house, and the conversation and the nighty night and everything. Remember, she goes into the bedroom, she puts on her pajamas, she comes out. They have a late night snack there at the dining room table, and then she and the boyfriend go into the bedroom, make the decision not to have sex. You know, by now it's like 4 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I don't know what you're like at 4 o'clock in the morning, but you know, boom, head pillow gone for me. And so, and you know, if you've got a little chemical inducement to deep sleep, no, I don't have any problem whatsoever buying believing everything she offers.
Oh well.
And then the funny guy, what I find difficult to believe is that he suddenly turns around, and realizes that his buddy's no longer in the room with him, and he tries to get the door to open, but the door won't open. So naturally, his next decision is, well, I guess I'll have sex with the unconscious person.
The door would not open.
Yeah. He looks around, he realizes the guy who came into the bedroom with him is no longer there. He's alone with the young woman. He tries to go back out of the living room through her bedroom door, but the door will not open. Now, here's the interesting part. Then he decides, well, the door won't open. I guess that means I'm supposed to have sex with the unconscious person. Then begins raping the young woman and then thinks, wait a minute, I better not because I care about my girlfriend. pulls it out, zips up, and goes, and suddenly the door opens. Because he doesn't go out through the window.
I just don't understand this. And I'm not going to make any more comments about
but the, it. But the idea that the California Appeals Court could say that it would have been rape if she had been married to Victor, but it's not because she was just his girlfriend? Wow. Yeah. Welcome to the 12th century.
Yeah, I guess so. My Lord.
I mean, there are certain religious codes that would insist that that the young woman marry the young man who raped her.
Well, you have certainly presented a story to me that is beyond the realm of my comprehension. I mean, the perpendicular position and all this other stuff, and of course, a couple of beers, and then they had something to eat, which should have definitely decreased the blood alcohol content and given her more control of her faculties. It would appear to me as though that may have entered into it. I don't know. Maybe I was just not understanding all the facts of the case. But
well, I just can't. For me, it seems to me that a young woman who is asleep, whatever the circumstances may be, that a young woman who is asleep has a right not to have someone come up and penetrate her.
Well, of course.
And then to plead in court that no fair, I get a do-over because the prosecution did not allege that I was that she was married. You see, that's the important thing here. The appeals court ruled that that the conviction would have stood had she been married.
Okay. I wonder what their position on necrophilia is.
Well, you know, I think it's been held that that's a dead act, Jim. Or maybe that it means never having to say you're sorry. I'm not sure.
I guess so. I'm not laughing because of the situation, because I think rape's a terrible thing in any situation. No person should be subjected to that type of forced sexual congress, but, well, I just don't know. I just don't know. But that is one of the more interesting stories I've heard over this network, and that's about all I can say.
Well, I understand. I've got another similar story that's even more horrifying out of Steubenville, Ohio, that is making quite a bit of controversy.
Yeah, how many people are involved in this?
It would appear that some portion of the power structure of Steubenville, Ohio, several members of its much vaunted high school football team, and various community members are involved to one degree or another. It involves a young woman from Weirton, West Virginia, who went to, and that's just across the Ohio River from Steubenville. She went to a preseason football player party where some are alleging she was given some sort of date rape drug. Others are saying she was just gotten all liquored up. And then a couple of members of the Steubenville, Ohio high school football team repeatedly abused her. There's one photo of two boys dragging her. One's got her by the legs, and the other's got her by the arms, and they literally carried her from party to party. At one point, mass urinating on her. And you've got people in the Steubenville community saying, well, they're just trying to damage the honor of our football team. And so she should have known better than to drink that much liquor.
So what are they trying to say, that the girl was in the golden showers?
Well, there was that, but there were pictures taken of her being variously violated by a couple of members of the football team. The photos of course,
mysteriously disappeared. But it's fascinating because it has created such a degree of outrage that a subset group of anonymous, you know, the online collective that online hacker collective that tries to do justice where it can, called NightSec, has gone to work and pulled together a report that lays out, well, let's see, who all do they name here? Webmaster and a private fan site of the football team that shows that he may have been in possession of numerous pictures of scantily clad underage high school girls. They detail the involvement of Sheriff Fred Abdallah. They detail the involvement of prosecuting attorney Jane Hanlon. They detail the involvement of the head football coach Reno Sakoch. The bar where a lot of this stuff was planned, and then the group that called itself the Rape Crew.
Well, you know, that's sort of beyond the pale for me, but I look at it this way. You know, when guys do stuff like this, they're throwing their wild oats. But if a woman is involved, regardless of her guilt or innocence, she is forever smeared and considered to be, you know.
Right, and the thing in Steubenville, they have done nothing.
Town.
Yeah, they have done nothing but try to smear this young woman. She did not go to the same high school. She went to a local parochial school. She was an honor student and a respected athlete in her own right. And they've had to step up police patrols in the neighborhood of her parents' home because death threats have been levied against her for having caused problems for the Steubenville
football team. Oh, boy. Well, I don't know. I just don't know. I don't understand that type of thing, and guess I never will. But like I said before, you know, when men do things like this, it's considered, well, they're sowing their wild oats. But when a woman is the participant, whether she wants to or not, she is so denigrated that it's considered to be okay, you know, and it's not okay.
No, it's not.
Does that make sense?
And it goes to that larger question, Jim, of how we go about raising young men in this culture. I mean, for God's sakes, with some of the photographs that were taken of the young victim in Steubenville, an individual, one of the student, so-called student athletes, a kid named Cody Saltz, tweeted, "Never seen anything this sloppy." And then later he tweeted, "I have no sympathy for whores." Because I guess he had dated the young woman at one time, and he said at one point he sent a message around saying, "Nobody breaks up with Cody Saltzman, I'll ruin that bitch." That was a month before the rape.
Wow, that's obviously there was definitely negative intent on his part, and to see her reputation destroyed as well as her state of mental well-being or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Well, listen.
It's a hell of a country sometimes.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Absolutely. And hope you have a nice weekend and you take care. And thanks for bringing that to my attention. By the way, have you heard some kind of story about this person having like a tattoo with a woman on his arm?
I didn't see that, but I may have missed it.
I never could quite understand it because it was brought up on IMUS this morning, and I never could quite understand what was going on there. But it had to do with some tattoo or something like that, and the implications for some type of perhaps maybe sexual congress or not. I'm not sure what it is. I just wondered if you'd heard about it.
Well, if you want, if you or anyone else wants to see some of this evidence that's been gathered by the Anonymous Collective, it's all at Local Leaks, localleaks.me, or localleaks.blogs.ru.
Okay. Well, listen, thank you for the link, and I'm going to let get off here and let somebody else talk to you. You take care and have a good weekend.
You too, Jim. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye now. This is a horrifying story. If you're on hold, please stand by. Well, it's too long to... just go there and read all the background. Localleaks.me. It's titled The Steubenville Files. One kid tweeted under the tweet handle Nodidamus, N-O-D-I-D-A-M-U-S. Some people deserve to be peed on. Jesus. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Good evening.
This is Isaac. How are you?
Hey, Isaac. How are you? I'm well.
Real good. Real good. Jim kind of made me call on this one.
Okay.
The story prior to the Steubenville stuff.
California story, yeah.
I was in a meeting with an attorney today, and I was just messing around on their computer system, and I was looking at Yahoo. I read this story on the Yahoo News. Now, you know how screwed up they can be sometimes.
Right.
Let me just share with you how I interpreted what they stated, because what you talked about, I'm confused and my eyes are crossed right now. Because when I read this story this afternoon, and I had the attorney look at it too, and we discussed the case, you know, because I want to get his perspective on it, but the story that we read this afternoon was that the boyfriend, the girlfriend, he wanted to have sex with her, she was tired, she didn't want to have sex. They didn't have a condom. And he left because he had something planned to do the next morning.
Right. That, so far, we're on the same page.
This is where it gets interesting now. Yahoo News, the way they described it was that a stranger, someone that no one knew, broke into the house or the apartment, walked into the room after the boyfriend left.
What?
Had sex with her. And they was having sex, and she thought it was her boyfriend having sex with her. And she did not, how she was aware that it was her, it wasn't her boyfriend. I guess a car went down the street, and you know how the light illuminates in the window?
Yeah.
And that's when she realized it wasn't her boyfriend. And so we were tripping off that conversation today, and the way that Yahoo presented the story, you know, it was very suspect to me because I said, hold it, this doesn't seem right. You know, was this a setup or did she get caught and, you know, in a relationship and then she wanted to go for, I mean, we're just throwing all kind of ideas because the story did not make any sense. But the story you read and what you and Jim talked about, totally different from...
Well, and that's the fact pattern as it's laid out in the court's own words. Everything I read came from the court's opinion, the background facts.
Mm-hmm.
And they said they break it into two parts, the prosecution's story and the defendant's story. And for me, the defendant's story falls all apart when he gets to the part where, well, when he describes, you know, he and another buddy went in together, but then suddenly he realized that he was alone and the door wouldn't open, so his next thought was, I'll go have sex with the unconscious person.
Wow.
And then only after he began raping her did he think, what will my girlfriend think? And then he voluntarily stopped having sex, stopped raping her, and left the premises, at which point he was found by the county sheriffs hiding behind some shrubberies.
Now, the conversation that me and this attorney had today, just to be picking each other's brain, was the subject of rape, because, you know, what we all think of rape is dealing with violence, and was there a no? And so he brought up a spin on it. He stated that he understood, based on a court's perspective, why they would do this. He was trying to give me his... So don't jump down my back, okay?
Oh, no. When do I jump down anybody? Come on, Isaac.
No, but he put a spin on it. He stated that he understood how the court would make that decision. He said, now, the question would be, did she say no? If that came out in the court case, he would be interested to find out if that came out. He said, but he can understand how the jury can make that conclusion and jump as to state this was rape. But basically, it was the lady was being deceived, you know.
Right, and that's what that statute was at least nominally designed to deal with, because it's not it's lack of consent by trick. It's lack of consent by a form of fraud is what that statute is describing. And the fact pattern, as the court even understood it, noted that when she realized what was happening, she screamed.
Okay.
So, it's the same thing that happens with date rape drugs. Or with this young woman who was rendered unconscious in Ohio. Consent, and in a way you can think of it along the same lines as, say, what most people understand as statutory rape. Statutory rape is, for instance, in West Virginia, when, one person who is of age, has sex with someone who is underage, and there's more than 4 years difference between their ages. So, say, a 14-year-old having sex with a 19-year-old. The 14-year-old is a victim of statutory third-degree sexual assault in the state of West Virginia because the 14-year-old is deemed legally, I mean, even in a situation where the 14-year-old is saying, yeah, baby, I love you, let's do it, whatever, and actively engages and participates, it is still deemed sexual assault because the law presumes that the 14-year-old is incapable of giving consent by reason of age. In other words, even yes won't get you to consent because the 14-year-old is deemed incapable of giving that consent by virtue of being under the age of consent. And so in a case of unconsciousness, there can be no consent because there is no human consciousness available. She was asleep. She went to sleep in one direction, wound up, and she, you know, the facts say she sort of realized something was weird when she was in the wrong position on the bed, you know, because most beds are longer than they are wide. And so, you know, I don't want to get graphic or anything, but she was out, she was not where she, not where, where her body, where her mind, her unconscious mind, you know, the little part that's always ticking away, even in a sleep situation, realizes it's out of position. And then, you know, the guy's doing it, and she's confused, and then she gets the view, and she screams. At which point, he's thinking, my girlfriend wouldn't appreciate it, me doing this. It wasn't dawning on him, and this is the part that just blows my mind. It wasn't dawning on him that he was committing rape. It was dawning on him that he was cheating on his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And for this, you know, there's a jury trial, and he gets 3 years in prison.
This is a little bit off subject.
Okay.
But it's still in the same realm of law, because we were talking, because, you know, my meeting today, we jumped from that story, then to the story about the Craigslist person where he donated his sperm, and now he's required now by law to pay child support.
Oh, I read a little bit about it. Yeah, that's crazy.
But here's the crazier one that we jumped to this afternoon. And I'm looking for this. I should have asked for it, but he was telling me about there was a case with a basketball player. And we know how stupid they can be, and we know how vulnerable they can be, too. And he was telling me about there's a case where there's a basketball player had sex with a woman with a condom, okay? And afterwards, he did the wrong thing. You know, I tell my son, hey, you dispose that stuff yourself, okay? But apparently, you know, she stated that, you know, when he was done and he was going to dispose the condom, I'll take care of that for you, baby, you know? And, well, as it turns out, she gave the condom to her girlfriend. And she did something with the condom. I don't know how she inserted it, syringe or whatever, but she got pregnant, and he got hit with a child support case, and he had to pay for it. And I said, now how can that be? And he was talking about the statutes of the law, of how the law system works. Now, have you heard anything that crazy?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Because in all of those cases where there's a pregnancy and a child is created, the law will always err on the side of seeing the child cared for one way or another, because most states have statutes abolishing, as socially and culturally obnoxious, the concept of bastardy.
Well, I have no problem with that part, but here's what I was stuck on stupid on. Because I asked him, I said, well, what happened to the girl, the lady who had the baby? Is she in jail? No. I said, why not? Can he press charges? He said, no, because when he gave his girlfriend that he was having sex with the condom, he transferred the property to her.
And absolutely.
That property, and then she transferred that property specimen to another friend.
Mm-hmm.
There's no crime committed, but he's got to pay 18 years. And I'm like, that is wrong.
And the day you enter your first year, your first semester, your first day of law school, they start filling your head with cliches and aphorisms and epigrams and maxims and things. And one of the first ones anyone who enters law school will hear is that hard cases make bad law. And the problem is in the modern system, Isaac, the only cases that go all the way through the system are the hard cases. And you can use that truism to explain Citizens United or the case you're describing or any number of cases. The Dred Scott decision is hard cases make bad law. Plessy versus Ferguson is hard cases make bad law. You could make a compelling argument that the Supreme Court, the primary function of most of the history of the United States Supreme Court is making bad law. Consider the present status of the Fourth Amendment. You know, a lot of people think the Fourth Amendment really took a whacking when the Patriot Act was passed, and there's truth in that. But the Fourth Amendment has been whittled away at, had been whittled away at for two generations before it. With things like good faith exceptions on behalf of the police. The Fourth Amendment, and we've done this on this program, you know, you can read the text of the Fourth Amendment, and it's pretty straightforward. It's a lot less confusing, grammatically, than the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment, you know, it talks about a well-regulated militia being necessary to the maintenance of a free state, the right of the people, blah, 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 blah. Well, the Fourth Amendment just says you can't do X without Y. And the Supreme Court has bent itself into pretzels over the years, creating exceptions for when you can. And what constitutes probable cause, and what does a search warrant upon oath or affirmation mean? If you ever want to see the absolute perversion of the Fourth Amendment, Isaac, go and read U.S. v. Leon, L-E-O-N, and read the majority opinion, which is just awful, and then read Justice Brennan's dissent. which speaks to issues of civil liberties. And I didn't mean to run this off on a tangent, but it's true. Cases where judges are left to their own, and you know, there's no way a judge can not bring his or her biases and prejudices into the courtroom. And this case in California, what it boils down to is it is a case of a bad jury instruction. But because of the way it was written, it also brings into very sharp focus the profound biases that attended the judicial minds that were making the decision. And meanwhile, it all happens against the background of the Violence Against Women Act, having just expired. You know, while one L. Michelle Bachman is out there filing the 392nd challenge to the Affordable Care Act. It's a little crazy-making, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, bring this up to stupid bit. You know, when I sent you that story yesterday, I thought it would be a good topic for you, because I knew that CNN was going to touch it, and
the New York Times got all over it today too.
Yeah, and they did a piss poor job, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. CNN.
Well, they did a for-profit media job of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm familiar with that area. You know, I grew up in Eastern Ohio, and. So I know about Stuperville, you know, that's the place where Dean Martin was,
right.
Was from. And a lot of mafia in that area, too.
Oh, all the way across the river into Weirton, you know, all mobbed up at one. Yeah, terrible, yeah. Terrible illegal gambling for, you know, generations. Prostitution, you know, the works.
It is still going on. And, but what intrigued me, because I'm into technology, and what intrigued me when Anonymous got involved with it. And from my understanding, they got involved because shit wasn't taking place. Nothing was being done about it. It was, okay, well, we're going to make something happen of it. And it worked successfully now, because now they want to do something. They're feeling the pressure. But in that case, there, I mean, that is, you know, it's like a typical Texas town football type situation. There's nothing there in Steubenville but gambling and whatever sports they have in that area. And that's a big thing for them down there. And for them to do what they're doing, they got what assistant coaches involved, letting these guys get drunk, having parties and the rape crew, you know. And I thought you would find it interesting, because I would love to hear your take on things, because I like the way you bring things to light to us. And definitely, you know, CNN and the other for-profit media, you know, they do a piss-poor job on a lot of things. I'm not happy with them. But I thought that it would be a good story for you and also for the Horn listeners, if they didn't know anything about it. And it's going to be interesting to see how it turns out, to see how much pressure on the outside, because now we have Mike DeWine. Do you remember him?
Oh, all too well, yes.
Yeah. Very interesting character, and very short, too, in person. Very, very short. Multi-millionaire guy here, political guy here in the state of Ohio, but now he's gotten involved in that, and he has taken over the case, which they're talking about in local media around here now. So it will be interesting to see how that works out. Because
is he the attorney general now, or what?
Yes, he's the attorney general of the state of Ohio. And Steubenville, on the last leg of Romney's campaign, they had all the campaign stuff going on in Steubenville, you know, because they couldn't touch the Youngstown area because that's strictly a Democratic area. And Steubenville's kind of Democratic, too, but I was surprised to see that when Romney was running, he was running most of his major, you know, campaigns in Eastern Ohio in Steubenville area. And, you know, you had John Kasich going down there and Mike DeWine and all of them. I was like, I thought that was out of place for that area. But for today, for DeWine to make that comment, stated that we are taking over now on this case. So stay tuned, see what happens.
Well, the fact that the local prosecutor even wound up having to recuse herself because she was conflicted out.
I mean, the entire structure of what remains of that poor, beaten down, broken up, you know, I mean, there's no there except for the high school anymore, just about. And that high school touches everyone. It's the only source of pride that that town has left. I mean, I refer everybody to go and look at that link that you sent me from localleaks.me. The Steubenville files, it takes a little while to read through everything and sort it all out. And deep, about two-thirds of the way down, there is a 12-minute video of a kid named Michael Colin Nodianos on a kind of a drunken rant, basically admitting all kinds of nasty stuff. And I thought seriously about running all 12 minutes of it, but having watched it, I'll be honest, Isaac, I didn't have it in me to just. Ugh.
And you know, and then if you read some of the tweets on the internet where people are talking about this particular case, you got the idiots out there too. But you have also people, I'm reading these posts in reference to the story where people, they're upset because they're stating that did Anonymous take into consideration the wishes of this girl to be publicized like that. Me personally, I think that she welcomes it because nothing was being done.
Well, I mean, the fact that this young woman is having to have increased police protection, you know, gee whiz, because she's getting death threats.
Yeah.
You know, here's the county sheriff over in Ohio saying, "Well, I don't have anything to do with the investigation, but I don't have jurisdiction." He's the county sheriff.
So, what is your opinion? Do you think it was a good thing for Anonymous to get involved?
Anonymous is a... In this case, yeah. Yeah, I do. Because if nothing else, they've brought national attention to something that is an absolute horror in its own right, but also too often happens all over this country. I was reminded as I read this the first time through, Isaac, of the story of that poor young woman in Texas who was forced to cheer. She was a cheerleader, remember? Mm-hmm. And she was forced to cheer for her rapist who was on the basketball team. And the whole thing came to a head when she sat down and would not cheer when the kid was at the free throw line or some such. And they punished her. And she sued. The courts sided with the rapist and ordered her family to pay the rapist's court costs.
He was a basketball star?
Yeah, high school basketball star. Texas.
Small town wage. Yeah.
But there's stuff that undergirds all of this too, Isaac. Small town ways, yes. But how we raise young men in this incredibly violent, desperately misogynistic culture. I mean, we just got through with a political campaign where we had to listen to Republican after Republican come to the podium and proudly describe forcible rape or girls who rape easy. Remember that one?
Yeah.
It may be the 21st century, but we ain't getting nowhere near that Star Trek world where there's equality and an understanding some sort of egalitarian culture where the sexes are concerned. You know, the Violence Against Women Act died in part because Eric Cantor couldn't stand the idea that there would be legal protections for trans people. Or First Peoples, Native American culture. You know, when in point of fact, raping the Indian women has been something that's gone on from the moment that the first white man set foot here. I've read accounts of how the Spaniards, for instance, at the massacre of Cholula, raped every woman they could find, old, young, indifferent. And that's the culture of conquest that continues to this day. The idea that there would be any legal question whatsoever in that case out of California is shocking to the conscience, or at least my conscience, and the Horn family's conscience. But somewhere out there, and I don't fault the defense lawyer. I don't fault the defense lawyer in this. But you know, I can almost imagine the client meeting. You know, man, I didn't rape her. And there's a culture where this is a culture where some people say, "That's right, son, you didn't." And the only thing that they could get out of the California Court of Appeals was, maybe you didn't, based on the way the law is written. And that tells me it's not like it's news to me, Isaac, but we got problems that run way deep.
Yeah, we do.
Clean to the bone.
It's pathetic. It's depressing. I see no light at the end of the tunnel. I don't. Where it's going to get any better? I mean, stupidity is running rampant on the political scene and on the regular scene. You know, I'm baffled. You know, me and the.
You're baffled. I got daughters.
Yeah.
What? How do I explain a case like this to them? I mean, there's an element in this country that says if my daughters aren't wearing burkas, that they're somehow asking for it. Look at that story out of Saudi Arabia a couple of days ago, where in the Syrian civil war, the imam says that there should be intercourse marriages, gang rapes of women older than 14 years who are either widowed or divorced. And they're open season. And it's very easy to look at a story like that and say, well, see, that's how they are, because, you know, they're not very civilized. And then all we have to do is turn our gaze back here and go, yeah, but what about us? I mean, it all kind of wraps together. The Marion Hammer, former president of the NRA, who says that ugly guns, ugly slaves, you know, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
They're marching by their tens of thousands in India demanding justice for a woman who was raped to death. But at least they're marching. Where's the 100,000 people marching through the streets of Steubenville? We can't get up off the damn couch long enough to do that.
And the football in that area is not bringing in no money for them, so I don't know what the benefit is for them. I mean, I don't know why they would be fighting.
No, it's not. Well, I guess there's a little bit of money involved, but no, it's about town pride. Now, apparently, Sandra just told me that the story of the intercourse marriages is some sort of a fake story. I'm glad of that.
Sandra, be on her JOB. I mean, kudos to Sandra.
but the India story isn't, and the fact that they ain't marching in Steubenville is very much real. But can you, I mean, can you imagine what would happen in Steubenville if a few thousand people marched? They'd have to have a few thousand people because, from what I'm reading, anybody who goes there and raises a ruckus is in real danger.
Interesting.
And sad.
Yeah, it's sad. It is sad. But, you know.
And all too American.
You got that right. You definitely got that right. But other than that, how have you been, Bob?
Oh, just another day in paradise, I guess, Isaac.
You know, I got something you probably appreciate. The other day, I ran into a evangelist. So.
Oh yeah.
Of course, yeah, and you know, trying to save me and everything. So I posed a question to them, and it shocked them. They had no answer for it. So I'm going to pose it to you, since you are the preacher on Wednesdays, and also too, are you going to do those again next Wednesday?
Oh, sure. He was just in retirement this week.
And play the music. Hey, I'm getting on you about that now. You haven't played that music. I want that music played. That makes the show. Because I tell people to come to your show because of that. And the past couple of times, you didn't do it. So.
Well, the past couple of times, we were dealing with Sandy Hook. And then this past Wednesday, there was something. Well, there's always something nasty. But.
Well, didn't you say that some lady didn't like it?
No. Kate hates it. But Kate hates it not because it's offensive or anything. Kate hates it because it's real. And she's experienced those freaks.
Me too. Yeah.
I mean, drive late at night through Appalachia with your AM radio on, and oh yeah. And the thing is, that guy that I parody on Wednesday evenings is mild by comparison.
Well, keep doing it, but in that mindset, the question I posed, and I thought that you would probably appreciate it, with this evangelist, I asked him, I said, you know, why isn't your God or Jesus trying to save the devil to eliminate hell? I had no answer for him.
No, because that goes places they can't even begin to go. Because that's one of those where in question two or question three, everything falls apart. And the whole thing turns into a giant fraud. You know, the ever-loving God who loves you so much he's willing to burn you in eternity, burn you for all eternity because of his love. I mean, he loves you even though you're in hell. It's your fault.
I told my kids when they were younger, and they were going through all this BS, and I tried to make them think about a lot of things. You know, I tell them thinking is very important. My kids are grown now. But one of the things I used to tell my kids was that, you know, do you feel the love that I give you? I said, yeah. And I said, you know, I tell you I love you, and then the things I do, and just good times we have, you feel it. I said, yeah. I said, now once in your life, have you ever, ever heard me tell you or demand upon you that if you don't love me, I'm going to kill you? And they laughed. I said, no, Dad. I said, then why would there be a God that demands that type of vow for love? And it made him think, and I just wanted him to think, you know.
Yeah, I mean, what does God need with a starship?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I love you so much that I'm going to kill you if you don't love me back.
Yeah. Prove to me that you love me. I mean, that's
and see, that goes back to my theory. the nastier the hotter and drier the climate, the nastier the gods get. Just look all around the planet. I think you'll find that to be true.
True. And they watch a lot of reality TV, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, speaking of reality TV, I'm not proud to admit it, but I saw a little bit of the first installment of Buckwild last night.
Man, I saw your tweet on that, and I was upset because of your senator is the reason why I wanted to watch it, but I missed it. Was it good, Bob?
You know, it's reality TV. I find reality TV, Isaac, to be about as interesting as watching paint dry. And what it amounts to is, like I said, hillbilly children behaving badly. It was so obviously staged and so obviously contrived as to, you know, have nothing to do with reality. And it was shot last summer because kids are going off rope bridges under a trestle into a little creek near the power plant. I loved it when the one kid said, there ain't nothing wrong with this water here by the power plant. I've been going into it 50 times and ain't got sick but once or twice. Haul, haul, haul.
Are they related to that one guy? Remember a couple years ago when I told you I saw that documentary on that one family?
No. These are not the wild, wonderful whites of West Virginia.
And that was entertaining. That was funny and very entertaining, that documentary.
Yeah, and they made it that way. The reality of that bunch is anything but. I mean, they are a scourge upon that community.
Yeah, I mean, because every cop, every community, the state police, they all know their names. And they stated, yes, we have all arrested them at one time or another. But they just let it go. I mean, interesting.
Well, they're petty drug criminals and petty thieves and the occasional attempted murder. And the patriarch of the Klan was not that way. He was actually a pretty sharp guy who watched coal companies getting rich. And then decided he was going to get his. And so he taught his entire family how to work the disability system. And yeah, a buddy of mine who lives down that way says the whites are not the problem. It's the other side of the family, you know, the mama's side, that brings in all the trouble, where all the trouble comes
from.
Mama
was a trip in that documentary.
Yeah, but no, these are just, I swear, looking at those kids, it was like, I've seen these kids before. Maybe they just look archetypal for around here, you know, same haircut, same scraggly ass little mustache on the half grown boys and the. But no, there was nothing overtly interesting about it. Just another attempt by MTV to find some demographic that they could show to the rest of the world as being different. But they set up a couple of, you know, basically the first episode was introducing you to the cast. And then, you know, they will have contrived several more incidents and episodes. They showed a woman that some girls living in a party house in South Charleston, and some neighbor who was trying to raise children halfway decent, coming over and telling them to turn their party down because they were trying to get their children to bed, and these little drunk white girls got all up in her face, and of course she was a woman of color, and you know where that's going.
I know MTV's goal is they want that show to replace Jersey Shore in the ratings. That's
right.
Their goal. Yeah. So, well, it's getting late. You're going to have to go off, but I just wanted to touch base.
Well, I'm glad you called in. It was a fun conversation, Isaac. It always is.
Well, always staying here, too. You know, I enjoy talking with people who have minds. Yes, I do.
Of all the things I've lost, I think I missed my mind the most, right?
Yeah, but you have a great weekend.
All right, you too, Isaac, and hopefully we'll talk sooner rather than later.
All right, then.
All right.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Isaac, calling from Ohio. I'm glad Sandra let me know that the intercourse marriages story was a fake. I need to dig into that a little further and find out how I got scammed. As if the Syrian civil war wasn't bad enough. Thanks, everybody, for helping us reach our catch up with last night and reach our fundraising goal for tonight. As soon as the show's over, I'm going to start paying some bills that, you know, sort of have that lupine pest wandering around the porch. Thank you very much. We couldn't do it without you. We'll be back on Monday. National championship game night, by the way. Roll Tide, roll. Yeah, I know. I know. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Betsy, moderators in the chat room. Tonight marks the fourth year of the Horn Molloy Skype chat after Molloy's show closes at a little bit after midnight. Thanks to Sparky for all he's done to keep that going. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to John Fox for all he does. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the people at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AcheAct.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.